You may proceed. Do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I do, about 5 minutes.
Certainly you may. Thank you, Mega Ford.
Judges, Mr. McCoy was convicted of two crimes. He was also acquitted of two crimes. There were two different dates alleged of lascivious intent with a minor that was actually an adopted granddaughter. There was some biological relationship through his son, his own son's wife. It was her sister that had the child. The appellant was babysitting the child and was accused then by the child of, you know, inappropriate contact. The appellant's position is in this, that with the lascivious intent of the indecent liberties, as well as the aggravated sexual battery, which requires sexual assault, which is very similar to lascivious intent. They basically have a lot of the same words in there about, you know, the arousal with the intent to arouse and so forth. Our argument would be that the Commonwealth simply has failed to prove the intent necessary for either one of these code sections. I will acknowledge that circumstantial evidence is sufficient. I will also acknowledge that circumstantial evidence can be proven other than by the four factors that I have listed in my brief.
Counsel, this is Judge Humphreys. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but let me see if I understand you correctly. You referred to the credibility of the victim, but your client made conflicting statements, I think a total of, if I remember correctly, about four different versions of what occurred. I think initially he denied it, and then he admitted that he touched the outside of the child's clothing a couple of times, and then he admitted that he essentially didn't know what came over him, and then he attributed the whole thing to a brain injury that had occurred back in the 1970s, as I recall. I don't see how this is a circumstantial case. If the victim is believed and the jury disbelieves your client for whatever reason, isn't that the end of our analysis on the sufficiency, as long as all the elements of the two offenses are testified to?
I see the court's point, but I don't agree with that, Judge. I believe the difference in this is that his four statements, I don't believe, are completely contradictory to one another. He was in a situation where the police showed up to interview him, and they did a recorded interview, and that's part of the exhibit. It was played for the jury, and he was trying to explain it. My client, of course, had told the jury about suffering a brain injury back in the 70s, which he's been on disability for ever since. There is one part in the transcript where his wife said that, you know, I can't tell any difference in him now and otherwise. However, his own son testified that he was a little slow and was unable.
We take the evidence in light most favorable to the prevailing party, which, of course, is the Commonwealth. So that means we have to disregard any evidence that tends to establish credibility on your side, don't we?
I think the court's right in that position, yes.
Well, I guess I'm wondering where that leaves you.
Well, at least be hoping that the court will consider that there's still not enough circumstantial evidence. You know, his four statements, I don't believe, were that polar opposite of one another. It was just difficulty with his situation in explaining how this incident occurred. The interesting thing is this, the young lady actually... Hello?
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 I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We're having thunderstorms here. I thought I lost you.
Oh, okay.
I apologize. It beeped on me and went out, and I heard my voice echo. The young lady actually did not testify. The court found that she was unavailable to testify, so the evidence submitted to the jury was by her aunt, an adopting mother, as well as my client's wife, which would have been the girl's grandmother.
Have any issue before us about admissibility of that evidence, do we?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, please repeat.
There's no issue before us about the admissibility of that evidence. As I understand it, the only assignment of error relates to the sufficiency of the evidence.
That's correct, Your Honor. I'm not saying that it was inadmissible based on the circumstances. I think the court was actually correct in making that ruling under the tender years doctrine, just that the young lady did not testify, so they were weighing her credibility through hearsay evidence. While admissible, you know, it's somewhat filtered out, and then they got to hear my client make his explanations of how this occurred. And again, the four factors there, I think, give a very good guideline of how to evaluate a case like this. And I realize other circumstantial evidence be using to prove the case, but
You keep saying this is a circumstantial case, and I'm struggling to understand how that's the case. The 4-year-old victim testified that, in essence, all the elements of sexual battery and indecent liberties. And, you know, if she's believed and she supplies all the elements, why is this a circumstantial case? It seems to me it's a direct evidence case. Now, I get the argument is that her statements are corroborated, at least to some extent, by your client's own admissions.
Yes, sir. And I think the difference in that is, and I'm assuming that the court wouldn't say that she testified through the aunt and grandmother, she didn't establish all the elements of the crime. She just said that there was a touching on her private parts. There was never any testimony through her that he was in any way what his intent was. I think what the Commonwealth is at best is arguing that my client's actions and his own statements show what his intent was, but he denied that there was any intent for sexual gratification or lascivious intent. And the young lady's testimony was that, you know, Papaw touched me on my private parts and I didn't like it. That doesn't establish his intent.
Well, Mr. Fleming, this is Judge Chapin.
Yes, ma'am.
Didn't he state that he got excited and then he tried to explain it later that it was in reference to the cartoons?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that what he told the investigator and also the officer, the sheriff's department officer, Mr. Stanley?
Yes, ma'am. And when he was interviewed with the police, they were sitting in one of the officer's trucks. And when you hear the tape, you can hear kind of the rapid fire, aggressive cross-examination of him. They were very good interviewers in that regard. They were asking him questions basically two at a time, and he would not finish up one sentence before someone else asked him a question. And I even was able to get Mr. Stanley to admit at one point, it's in the record, that he said it was in regards to the cartoons. So he got caught up in that moment of watching television.
He got excited about watching SpongeBob SquarePants or something? Is that the defense, essentially?
Yes, Your Honor, without making light of that, there was some old cartoons that he was watching and just got up, caught up in the excitement because she had crawled in his lap at her own behest and sat on his lap and said, you know, Papaw rubbed my legs, and he was rubbing his legs, and he inadvertently got in the area of her private parts, and he said it happened a couple of times, and she said, stop, it's hurting me, and he quit. And then he tried to explain to his son and his wife, as well as the police, how this happened. My client, unfortunately, is a bit slow and not very articulate.
I thought the evidence through the mother and the grandmother was that the child testified that he stuck his hand down inside of her pants and, as I think she put it, squished her cookie, which is her word for her vagina.
Yes.
And if that's believed, why isn't that sexual battery and indecent liberties given her age?
Given her age because the statute still requires that they show some intent on his part, just the inadvertent.
Can't you infer intent from what an individual does? Isn't that a reasonable inference that a fact finder can draw? And it wasn't accidental, sticking his hands down inside of her pants and squeezing her vagina is not something that happens accidentally?
Well, he tried to explain how it was accidental. He denies ever sticking his hands down their pants, and they accused him of doing this a couple of times. He was actually acquitted of a couple of them.
Well, I think we understand that. I think the problem, though, is that we're not fact finders, and the jury was able to assess this and assess credibility, and we have the result, and we're bound by that unless there's absolutely no evidence in the record to support it. And I'm not hearing you explain that there's no evidence in the record to support it. Your argument seems to be that your client was more credible, and therefore the jury should have believed at least, you know, the portions of his statements that don't establish his intent.
Well, and my argument is also that once the Commonwealth put on their case, at best what they had was the little girl saying that he had touched her inappropriately a couple of times, and then his explanation of what happened and how it was accidental. I still think they have to show his intent, and while intent can be inferred, that's why we also have the 4-pronged test that shows what other factors out there to show what his intent was. So I think it's possible for someone to inadvertently touch another person's private parts without there being the intent to gratify. I'm still here. Can anyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I keep getting clicks. It must be the thunderstorm.
I am also. Of course, I'm down in Lebanon as well. But Do you have additional argument? You have a little over 5 minutes left.
No, Your Honor. I think that would complete my argument.
Thank you, Mr. Fleming. Are there any questions for Mr. Fleming?
No questions. Thank you.
I have none.
Thank you. Ms. Johnson?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, this is Victoria Johnson for the Commonwealth. This case turns on the jury's credibility finding. The jury found the accounts from the victim more compelling and believed them and did not choose to believe the defendant's stories. And I submit that there are a lot of circumstances. I agree that it's not a circumstantial case in and of itself, as we have the direct evidence from the little girl and from Mr. McCoy's denials. But there are circumstances that corroborate the little girl's statements. And those circumstances include the behavior that the little girl's mother described in the child. The little girl demonstrated rebellious behavior, bathroom accidents, and sexual acting out after these incidents were reported to the mother. She also told investigators who interviewed her that McCoy's touch was bad and that it hurt and tickled and made her mad. And I submit that those are circumstances that the jury had in front of them and could consider as well in considering the credibility of these statements that the child made to her mother. Essentially, the defendant argues that his client is a little bit slow and therefore he just didn't explain himself well. But I submit that there is testimony in the record that contradicts that story. We have the defendant's wife stating that, you know, she never saw any difference from him after that traffic accident that he attempted to blame his behavior on. The defendant himself testified that, you know, he had this traffic accident and recalled it in perfect detail, only spent one night in the hospital, and yet claimed that he had such a traumatic, you know, injury from that he was not able to explain himself. We also have testimony from the wife where the defendant managed their household bills, managed their money entirely, although he did not work. And we have, you know, the defendant's own statement on the stand. The jury was free to view him, make conclusions based on his demeanor that we can't see on the cold record, and could compare his various stories. The jury heard the tape where the officers initially interviewed the defendant and could determine, you know, the credibility of his statements at that time. The jury could view his statements on the stand. The defendant admitted that he was excited when he touched the little girl and got caught up in the moment, and then he attempted to explain that away by making up a story, an unlikely story, that he was excited and caught up in watching these cartoons. He also claimed that the little girl was confused and that he did not place his hand inside her pants, but rather just rubbed the outside of her pants and made up some story involving the blanket that was over the little girl at the time he touched her. The stories that the defendant told were not believed by the jury, and I submit that ends the analysis in the Court of Appeals. While the defendant points to the four-factor test, from an earlier case, from Viney, the Supreme Court of Virginia has explained that those are not dispositive factors. That's evidence that may prove lascivious intent, but the Commonwealth is not limited to those, to proving those factors. Furthermore, the language of Code Section 18267.3 refers to sexually gratifying any person, as does 18270, talks about inciting lust and whatnot in 18270. I submit that the child's behavior is indicative that the defendant acted in a way to sexually gratify himself and had an effect on the victim, and that the evidence was sufficient in this case. If the court has questions, I'm happy to elaborate on any of that, But I really believe that this case just comes down to a credibility finding that was made by the jury.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Are there questions?
No questions, thank you.
None for me.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you. We'd ask you to affirm.
Thank you. Mr. Fleming, you have a little over 5 minutes if you would like to avail yourself to that in your rebuttal.
Yes, ma'am. In response to the behavior by the young lady, that evidence was submitted by the adopted mother. However, there was no evidence from a medical expert to explain to a jury that the sexual acting out or the bathroom behavior is related to being sexually molested. While I think that counsel, as well as the court, have had enough experience in these cases that we know that that seems to be indicative of it, there was nothing submitted to the jury for their consideration that these behaviors would corroborate any prior sexual molestation. As far as gratifying any other person, the defendant was asked by myself, as well as the prosecuting attorney, about did this type of behavior incite any type of sexual arousal, and he denied that. He also said he had no intent to arouse this young girl, and of course she through her mother and grandmother, basically did not make any statements that he had said or done anything that indicated that he was trying to arouse her. Further, there was evidence from the wife of the defendant that while she argued that, you know, he was fine and so forth and couldn't tell much difference in his behavior, she also acknowledged that the young girl had never acted strange around her grandfather. In fact, that was the first event that she just blurted out that, you know, Papa touches my cookie, that, you know, the child had been with him all day, and she even talked about how Papa was her favorite. So the wife's statements that, you know, she was aware or was not aware and so forth, I think, go to a lot of that. She acknowledged that the relationship between the grandfather and the victim in this matter was good. Up until that point, she had never seen any indication that anything was going on. And that would be my rebuttal, Your Honors.
Okay. Thank you. Are there questions?
No, thank you.
None for me.
Thank you, Mr. Fleming. Thank you, Ms. Johnson. The case is submitted. And I think Mr. Fleming is leaving for vacation, so...